Hi there. This is a CPD in 140 podcast on EduTalk Radio, and I'm Ian Guest. I'm currently engaged in doctoral research looking at teacher professional learning supported through Twitter. If you're interested and would like to know more, head over to my research blog, cpdin140.wordpress.com. One of the methods I'm using is semi-structured interviews, and if participants give the permission, I'll post the resulting chat here on EduTalk. If you're interested in being involved, I'd be delighted to hear from you. Just drop me a tweet or a DM at Ian in Sheffield on Twitter. Sarah Thomas is a regional technology coordinator in the United States and at SarahDadTeacher on Twitter. I'll pop a link to her profile in the show notes. I became aware of Sarah through the EduMatch hashtag on Twitter. And if I describe it just as a hashtag, that would be doing it a real disservice because it's so much more than that. But I'll allow Sarah to say more about that during the course of the podcast. So without further ado, I'll also allow her to introduce herself and we'll get started. Without further ado, I'd like to introduce to everyone Sarah Thomas, who's a regional technology coordinator in the United States. I'll not say any more about the details. I'll give Sarah the chance to speak for herself, other than to say that she says she's a big Twitter fan and that she's a lover of all things technology. So, Sarah, thanks very much for joining me tonight. And I wonder if you could say a little bit more about how you got into education, first of all, and what your role is.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for having me. As you said, I'm a regional technology coordinator, and I'm also a doctoral candidate. So hopefully I will be finishing in March, which is a lofty goal. And if not March, then definitely by June. And the way I got into education was through alternative certification. This was in 2004, I want to say. I had just graduated from university. And I had entered a master's program in intercultural communications. I saw a flyer on the wall that was recruiting for teachers in a nearby school district, and I had always wanted to go into education. So I decided to go for it, and that was pretty much my journey. We had an intensive summer-long training, and then after that, surprise, I have my own classroom. definitely, I loved it from the beginning. It was a bit challenging towards the beginning because I did not have the benefits of having gone through that, you know, through a traditional four-year program. But I learned a lot on the job and from my students and with my students. And after becoming connected, then it was a tremendous time of growth. I would say that I had two growth trajectories. The first one was when I encountered a principal who started using my strength in technology to for the school. And afterwards, the second big aha moment was when I got connected and learned about you know, how I could learn 24/7 with other educators.
So let's look at that a little bit more then, the way that you got connected. How would you describe that happening? You said it was an aha moment. What were the circumstances which led to that?
Absolutely. Well, I had been on Twitter ever since it was first created, so about 2006-ish, but I was using it mainly for personal reasons. I was using it to follow pop culture and to connect with friends, things of that nature. But I was at a conference in 2013, in April of 2013, and at the conference, which was centered around educational technology, there was a hashtag. So I decided at that point, since my own Twitter account was not really focused towards education, I wanted to create a brand new one that was primarily oriented towards education so I could learn more directly with the people that were in attendance at the conference. So I set up my current Twitter account and started using the hashtag from the conference. And from there, afterwards, I continued using Twitter, and I stumbled upon Twitter chats and started using those to connect even deeper. And then I saw a call for proposals at a conference a few states away, decided to fill it out. They accepted me. So that was my first time kind of going outside of my state to connect. And that first initial experience changed my life, literally.
Change your life in what way? How did it make that happen?
Well, I was very scared at first. It was kind of a what-if moment. Like, I just saw it, and I decided to go ahead and fill it out. I said, there's no way that they're going to accept me. And then when they did accept me, then I had a lot of hesitation right up until the day of the conference. And finally, with the encouragement of my family, then I decided to go for it. My family went along with me, and I did my very first presentation at that time. And it was just, it was an eye-opening experience. I got to connect with people who I'd been chatting with for the longest time on Twitter, face-to-face, and just saw the opportunities for more learning together. And it was just amazing. And from that moment on, then I was just addicted to connecting with people, because I saw not only the virtual benefits, but also the face-to-face benefits once you had those virtual connections in place. So from there, soon the next one was going back to that state for an ed camp. And then after that, the next travel was across the country for another ed camp, which was definitely a huge, that was another moment of anxiety, because that was the first time I had flown by myself without, you know, anyone there to receive me, and booking a hotel, booking a car. But it was just a grand adventure, and I just loved being able to learn face to face with these people that I'd been speaking with for the longest time.
That's a fascinating trajectory, actually. Yeah. One of the things that you mentioned in there was Twitter chats, and that's obviously one of the activities that you engage with when you're on Twitter. Can you say a little bit more about what there might not be one, but what a typical Twitter session would be for you? If you got a little shadow on your shoulder who was monitoring your activity, what would he or she notice about Sarah as you're engaged on Twitter?
All right, on Twitter, oh goodness. We do a Twitter chat every Sunday. There's one that I do called EduMatch every Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And from there, then I use participate.com to schedule, you know, a lot of questions. And then people will answer the questions. And we also simultaneously have a video panel taking place. So people sign up to be on panel, and, you know, they have that conversation. And the participants to Twitter chat are kind of back channeling and answering the questions as well, and submitting questions for the panelists and things of that nature. But different Twitter chats take different formats. You know, there are some that are, you know, the time is definitely a variable. So ours is about 15, 20 minutes. There are some others that are 30, some that are an hour. But usually there's like that question, and then people will answer and respond to one another and engage. And over time, you really develop a very strong network.
And time is quite significant, actually, because if I'm right in my investigations, EduMatch has been going for a couple of years now. Would that be right?
Yes, absolutely. We started in September 2014. So the Twitter part started in 2015, I want to say. Like the Twitter chat started, I think May 2015 was when the Twitter chat started. But we'd been using hashtags since day one to try to connect people. So pretty much whenever someone filled out the form that they wanted to be the person of the day, then we would ask them about topics that interested them. And then so we would tweet out their handle and what they said and hashtags to try to get them connections.
Well, that's quite interesting, actually, because you mentioned hashtags a couple of times, and EduMatch obviously is a hashtag itself, but you also have an EduMatch Twitter account, is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
And how do they work, either together, or do they fulfill different roles?
For the Twitter account, for the EduMatch Twitter account, then we usually send out things about our person of the day, whoever signed up on the form. We also retweet blog posts through Hootsuite. So anyone who signs out, who signs up with the on the Person of the Day form, then if we can find their feed, then we will tweet that out. So every time they have a new blog post, then that'll go out under the Edgy Match account as well, and we'll tag them in it. And also general announcement, but the hashtag is open for anyone to, you know, pretty much post anything that they feel would be relevant to our community.
Hmm. And in there you mentioned Person of the Day. Could you say a bit more about what that activity involves? Who
Absolutely.
Is a person of the day?
Yeah. On our website, edumatch.org, then there's a Google form about maybe a third of the way down on the page. And that was pretty much the backbone of EduMatch. So the very second day, I created a Google form to kind of keep it more organized. And people go in and they put in their name, their Twitter handle, and they answer several questions. Like, for example, what are their interests? What are their favorite hashtags? Do they have a blog? Their Voxer handle. Also, one question that they have for the educational community. So that way, you know, we can try to get some engagement going and people can answer their questions. And so from that, you know, it goes into a Google Sheet and I just kind of search it for matches and just tag those people whenever a match comes up.
Excellent. It sounds as though the Edgy Match started off quite small, but it's actually blossomed and bloomed. And a couple of other things that I've noticed, you've, as a community, produced a book. Could you say a bit more about that?
Absolutely, yeah. So we just released our very first book, hopefully one of many, but this is Edgy Match Snapshot of Education 2016. So there were 20 educators from around the United States, and hopefully we'll expand to international. This coming, 20 educators each submitted a chapter about something that they're doing in their schools or in their districts or something educational that they've observed. So we came out to write this book because several members had expressed interest in being published authors, and I had always had that dream as well. So when it was time, you know, when we had grown to the point where we were looking to trademark, then they were looking for a product. So when I saw that ebook was one of the options and things started coming together, and so I floated the idea out for Voxer Group if anyone wanted to try to crowdsource this book. And so about 20 people had a chapter that came to completion. There were a few more who started on a chapter, but it didn't quite finish. Hopefully they'll revisit it for 2017. But there were 20 chapters total that came in, and I put a beginning chapter kind of telling the history of EduMatch and the end chapter saying where we've been over the course of 2 years, and so that was our 22 chapters.
And have you had any feedback on that? Have you had any responses from people saying how they've found the book, how they've used it?
Yeah, right now, we just put it out the last week of December, so it's been kind of, so it's still relatively new, but we've gotten some great feedback so far. We've been invited to quite a few Twitter chats as well as podcasts, and in addition, there's some people who have... who are doing book studies on it. So there's one of our authors who's kind of doing like a general book study. And there have been a couple of other people who have like asked for books for Ed Camp so they could do a book study there, or they said that they're going to do it for, you know, book study for their staff. So it's going really well. And, you know, we're looking for people to submit for 2017. So the form, the Google form is already out for that, for people to start getting their thoughts together to submit for 2017.
Excellent. And I noticed that you've very generously made it available as a free PDF as well as printed versions. Do you see those different formats addressing different audiences, perhaps?
Absolutely. Pretty much the mission of EduMatch, one of the missions of EduMatch is to provide free and open information, because we learn and grow from each other. As we, you know, it should really be a free exchange of information to eliminate any kind of barriers to this knowledge. So that's why we really wanted to make it free. However, some people do prefer having that physical book in their hand. Some people do prefer to see it on Kindle. So what we did is pretty much set the lowest possible price to put it on those platforms. So it's definitely not intended to generate any kind of revenue, but, you know, definitely just to get the word out there.
Mm. A word you used there was mission. So EduMatch has a mission. How did that originally get formed or articulated? Was it something that you generated in order to help the community come together? Or did the community actually come up with the mission?
Well, the thing about EduMatch is that every time someone joins our network, they come in and they bring a piece of themselves. They bring their ideas, they bring their thoughts, and we just kind of grow from there. So initially, you know, I wanted it to be like a free way to connect people. And from there, we have just kind of grown because people have had suggestions about like different things we could do. And usually, you know, if someone suggests something, then the community kind of rallies behind it. And from there, you know, we've expanded to the Voxer group, to doing tweet and talks, which is like the Twitter chat and the podcast, to doing the book, to doing the what else, ed camps. We've done a few meetups, and I mean, just there's been some talk of a mixtape, which is our newest project that we'll be looking into, since so many people in the group are musical. Then a couple of days ago, then someone said, hey, we should just get together and make a CD. So I mean, you know, that's just going to be something for fun that we're thinking of doing. So definitely just following up on the suggestions and the ideas of the members.
You've got a really eclectic mix of different environments that are being used there, and I guess you started originally with the intention of it being a way to help each other with your professional aspects of your learning. But right there at the end, you mentioned fun, and the mixtape is going to be more to do with fun. Is that an important aspect within there?
Absolutely. I think that one of the things that really helps EduMatch thrive is the fact that we're more than a professional learning network. We're a personal learning network. And even more than that, it actually feels like a family, because, you know, we build that relationship. Just like our students, they learn best from each other when there's that relationship there. Then the same thing for us as lifelong learners. We're constantly building that network, those relationships. And in the Voxer group, we're talking like nonstop in there, like 24/7. And it's crazy. We have people from all over the world, but people come in with their questions about work, their questions about life. And I mean, we really form those bonds that we can get into even sometimes sensitive topics that it's very hard to talk about in other places when you don't have those relationships. So I mean, we're able to just kind of build those relationships, and part of that definitely includes the fun, having fun together.
Well, having fun together, I used the word community a short while ago, and that's a bit presumptuous of me, but I think it's a word that you have used elsewhere. What are the characteristics of the EduMatch community, either of the individual people themselves? Are there specific things you could say about them, or is it the group that's more important?
I think that everyone brings their strengths in, and there's an overall sense of passion about education. Like, people are connecting and they are learning, you know, out of their desires to become better. So continually improving themselves, embracing the whole lifelong learning, and at the same time also being very, very open and willing to share. Because everyone, you know, like we say, everyone is an expert at something. So just sharing our stories, sharing what we're good at, sharing our challenges, and, you know, we can learn from one another. So, I mean, I would say that really those three things are pretty much the embodiment of just about all of the members of the group.
That's fascinating, and I think there's some important messages there. We've now covered a number of different areas. You've got lots of ways in which you're connecting with each other internally, extending to other people and inviting them in a sense. Do you have any sense in which all of these different strands are reaching out or having an impact, that's perhaps a better way of expressing it, on the wider community within education? Do you notice at all that you're getting noticed or EduMatch is getting noticed?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last part of what you said.
I was just wondering whether or not you're aware of whether EduMatch is getting noticed in the wider educational community beyond the Voxer group and the Google Plus and etc.
I think so. I think so. I've been hearing a positive response from the educational community at large. I really feel like right now we are growing very quickly. There's definitely some spurts where, you know, it's not like a steady, you know, incline like that. But when you have different events, that's typically when I see the most growth. For example, the ISTEs, different virtual online events, then that's when we see the most growth. And there have been some events where I've been invited to speak about EduMatch, where other people have been invited to speak about EduMatch. So definitely I feel that there is an impact being made in the educational community.
And do you think, you mentioned ISTE, which is a technology conference, I think I'm right in saying, and different online events. Do you think that that's a prerequisite, that people have to be comfortable online in order to get benefit from learning communities like EduMatch?
That's a good question. Not necessarily. And the reason that I would say that is twofold. First, each of us in the EduMatch community exists in, we have our persona online and we have our persona offline. And all of these connections that we form when we learn from one another, then we can in turn spread that to our local communities, to our schools, to our, to our colleagues offline as well. So I feel like there's that benefit. And in addition, many times we have, well, not many times, but occasionally we have had some offline events. And if someone's not connected, then they can come and definitely participate there, and we'll embrace them. And we'll try to sell them on the benefits of growing their online community as well. But definitely, you know, our organization is open to anyone, regardless of technology proficiency.
Do you think they would be intimidated by the possibilities that are available, in the sense that it might be overwhelming that you've got a Voxer group, a Twitter account, you have podcasts and so forth? Is there any sense in which people might be intimidated by that wealth?
There's definitely a possibility of that. There have been instances where people have come into the Voxer group and then they kind of see the rate of messages that are time, and they may feel that it's too much for them. That's typically before they hear someone say, "Turn off your notifications." So, but I think that the fact that we are in so many different places, then that allows us to reach people where they are. So that's kind of the purpose of it. So a lot of people may not be comfortable on Twitter or may not be comfortable on Voxer, but they are comfortable on Facebook. So for them, we have a Facebook group. Same thing for Instagram, for Snapchat. We're on multiple different platforms of social media. So hopefully, you know, people will join us wherever they are, and then hopefully be encouraged to join us in other places as well as they get more familiar with us on that particular platform.
That's a really interesting point. Absolutely. In that It's not just about reach, having all these different channels of communication. It's also about finding what people find most comfortable, I guess. Yeah, I like that.
Thank you.
As you know, my research is into Twitter specifically, so how do you see Twitter fits within that that galaxy of opportunity? What function does it perform specifically?
What function does Twitter perform specifically? Okay, Twitter is kind of where we originally started. So we originally started with Twitter with the hashtags and with the person of the day. So we've stayed true to that. We still do the person of the day, and we still use common hashtags to help connect people. And in addition with the Twitter chat, then, you know, we do that every Sunday. Also, I would say it's a great way, it's a great platform for general announcements because the educational community is growing on Twitter. I know that outside of education, it seems to be dwindling a little bit, but hopefully us educators, we educators can keep it going strong. So I see that there's always new people that are joining Twitter as educators, and there's always people signing up on EduMatch as well.
So do you think Twitter has that visibility? It's in the public, even if it's only as a result of presidential candidates which have become presidents. It's there in the public consciousness. Do you think that helps?
I'm so sorry, the audio is starting to break up on this end a little bit.
No problem. Do you think the fact that Twitter happens to be particularly visible through other forms of media that makes it a mechanism through which people can get access? They know that it's there, so they're aware of it.
Yeah. I would say Twitter is interesting because my first entryway to connecting professionally was through Twitter. And I feel that is the case for a lot of people. I know that there are way more people on Facebook than there are on Twitter. However, I think that Twitter still seems to be the most popular platform for educators that I've encountered for professional learning. There's a growing number on Voxer, and people are starting to use Facebook more and more now. But I remember I used to have a very defined line that no, Facebook is just for my family and friends. And I feel like a lot of people still kind of feel that way. But you're seeing that now there are more and more groups of international educators learning and growing on Facebook as well. But Twitter, I would say, is probably the most popular one in my experience for educators.
In a sense, that brings me almost full circle back to where one of the original comments that you said was you started connecting on Twitter, and then one of the, I think the word he used was, you went on a grand adventure to a face-to-face meeting, an ed camp. How do these face-to-face encounters sit with the online ones? Do they complement each other?
I'm sorry, were you asking how do the interactions go from Twitter to face to face?
Yeah, in a sense, how ed camps that take place often use Twitter as a means to keep people connected before they arrive and maybe afterwards. But the face to face itself, what significance does that have?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the face-to-face is just, I mean, it just feels magical after you've talked to someone for so long on Twitter. And then I heard someone say, I can't remember exactly who it was, but someone was saying this on Voxer, that first when you start connecting with someone on Twitter and then you chat with them on a Hangout, then that's like a different feeling. And then when you actually see them face-to-face and you can shake their hand and, you know, give them a hug, then that's a whole different ballpark right there. So, I mean, it's just, it's amazing. We had a session at ISTE. Our very first EduMatch meetup was in June 2015. and we had a Birds of a Feather session at ISTE, and there were two people in the room who they realized who each other were on Twitter, and they got up sporadically and ran across the room and hugged each other, because they, when we run around the room and we introduced ourselves by name, then, you know, that didn't mean as much as once they found out what each other's Twitter handles were, and then it was just like, ah, and they ran across the room and hugged each other. It was great.
What you're describing there for me sounds like an emotional response to professional involvement. That's quite unusual, isn't it? Do you ever get that with conventional district-led professional development?
Yeah, that's generally not typical. But I think, like, now when we're hyper-connected to one another, then, I mean, the relationships just really are strengthened. And I have to say, the Voxer platform in itself, the voice component, adds so much to it. There's been people that I may have met once or twice face to face, and the second or third time I meet them, I'm already staying at their house when I come to their town. So that's happened quite a few times. So you really build these strong friendships when you talk to people, you know, every day, all day long.
That's delighted in a sense that you get so much positivity from it. It's clear in, I've watched a couple of the podcasts and I've read the book. People are, or appear to be, incredibly positive, and everything that you do is. So do you think there is a downside? And if so, what are the challenges that you face, or the difficulties that people sometimes experience with this?
So you're asking if there are challenges or difficulties in the connection space?
Yeah.
I would say yes. There are definitely sometimes some challenges in terms of connecting, because whenever you connect and you are taking a risk. You know, definitely one thing to keep in mind is the proper modeling of digital citizenship. So sometimes, you know, when people connect and they may not make the best choices sometimes, then that can be risky. But I feel like the overwhelming majority of people, when they do connect, then it's for positive reasons, you know, looking to better themselves and to grow. I feel like sometimes there's a challenge in that, I know that a lot of times students face cyberbullying, and I wouldn't say that that's not a risk for adults as well, because sometimes you have internet trolls that will come and just, you know, just kind of say negative things. But I think that, I mean, those are risks that we take in everyday interaction offline as well. So I would say that for me, the connections online have been overwhelmingly positive. The few negative interactions that I have had, I mean, they happen. Life happens. But what I've gotten out of it has been so much better than that.
The benefits have outweighed the drawbacks.
Absolutely. Yep.
No one that I've spoken to, when sort of asked if there are any particular challenges or difficulties, ever mentions the time involved. And clearly, given that you're going to be running a session tomorrow night as well, and do every week, and the calendar appears to be full for months in advance, and all the other things, it must involve an incredible commitment of time, for which clearly you're not paid. So is that a downside? Do you see that as a drawback?
I don't see it as a drawback. Usually, I'll say usually. I don't see it as a drawback because, again, I feel like I'm gaining so much from these experiences. Sometimes time can be a bit of an issue. But I think that time, I've heard someone say before that the things that you find important, you make time for. And I find this very important. I know personally I struggle with being able to say no, especially the things that are like ongoing and repetitive. Those are probably the struggles for me. I love doing all kinds of learning opportunities, but it's hard for me to say no. And sometimes when things are like recurring and ongoing and long projects, then sometimes those are the things I need to say no to, but I struggle with that.
We're getting close to the end. I said I wouldn't go over an hour, and we're under it at the moment. But I wonder if I could just ask a couple more questions. One of the questions I think is probably going to be fairly easy for you is that I've asked everyone, what would you do if Twitter went away? What would you do if it folds tomorrow? And it appears that you probably won't have a problem given the number of different platforms you're using. Would that be fair?
It would, but at the same time, it would make me very, very sad. And it would make a lot of people very sad, because that is truly where EduMatch began. And, I mean, we would have the other platforms, but I feel like, I think it would be fair to say that Twitter is kind of the backbone of a lot of the things that EduMatch does. So still, you know, that person of the day that started on day one, and that's still going strong. And, I mean, doing it on Twitter is by far the easiest platform to do it. Just with the numbers of educators on there and the number of Twitter chats and how easy it is to just kind of use that hashtag that people are looking for. And if that hashtag is in a tweet and someone has it on a column on TweetDeck and it pops up in there, they're going to say, oh, you know, this is a cool person, I might want to follow them. So I think that it has so many benefits. So I would hate to see it go.
I'm sure. We'll keep our fingers crossed that they get their financial accounts and everything sorted. What about the future for EduMatch? You mentioned that you're hoping to produce a 2017 version of the book. What else have you got in the pipeline, if it's not revealing any company secrets?
For the future of EduMatch, I mean, it's really open-ended in terms of what's going to happen next. I mean, we definitely want to continue doing everything that we've started, but I mean, people, as they join, they bring their interests, they bring their ideas, they bring their passions, so definitely open to incorporating those. And hopefully, we're looking at maybe doing a conference one day. There's a couple of other things that people have brought to the table that are possibilities, but you know, just taking it one day at a time, so just hoping to continue to grow.
And of course, trying to find time in order to be able to do it.
Absolutely.
I've really enjoyed this. I've covered all the material that I'd like to cover, but there may be things that you, any observations that you have that I've not given you a chance to talk about. Is there anything in particular that stands out that you think I ought to know?
I would say just the fact that I would reiterate that we all have expertise in something. So, with EduMatch, then really we want to help people bring that expertise out. Just everyone has a story. Everyone's story is valuable. So we started out grassroots. We're staying grassroots. There are so many different, you know, job titles or roles that people have, but we're all gears in a machine, and we're working together to benefit students. So so definitely just continuing to work together for the good of all students is what we hope to continue to do.
Excellent. Would you say that the students that you come across, could you identify what's changed for them about their educational experience as a result of EduMatch? That's a really tough one to think about, but have you might have given it some thought?
Absolutely. I'm no longer in the classroom, so I'm a regional tech coordinator. However, I was in the classroom when EduMatch started, and up until about maybe a couple months after a year that EduMatch was in place. And I know that my journey as a classroom teacher, I became so much better, and I was able to integrate so many more things in my own instruction from what I had learned from people in EduMatch. So for example, if I was interested in anything like Breakout EDU or coding or mystery hangouts or just really anything that I had heard about that sounded cool, then there was usually somebody in EduMatch who had tried it or, you know, who had some knowledge on it. And a lot of times we would just try to find out these answers to different challenges together and learn about new tools together. I remember there was one blogging platform that a lot of us were using that, started charging money. And we were looking for ways to kind of find a free alternative. So we just got on a Google Hangout and everyone just threw out suggestions and we would try them and share our screens with each other and look at different pros and cons. And that was just, you know, a powerful moment to work together and learn together.
And that's an incredibly powerful message on which to close. I'll say once more, Sarah, I'm really grateful for the time that you've given up today. I've learned an awful lot from as we've been talking just there. And I'm absolutely certain that my research is going to benefit a lot from what you've said. So I'm just going to press the stop button on the record. So I'd like to close out by saying a big thank you to Sarah once more for being so generous with her time and for her perceptive comments and letting us know all about EduMatch. And I'd like to repeat my invitation to any listeners who might like to be involved in the project. So just catch me on Twitter or the CPD in 140 blog.